You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started today, I want to let you know about a free resource we're offering. It's an e-booklet called Pipeline: Succession at Every Level. Now, you may have already downloaded Developing Your Leadership Pipeline and walked through that with your staff team. If you have, awesome. This is your next step. Most of the time, when we think about succession, we think about replacing the person at the top. We need to think about, however, reproducing leaders at every level of your ministry. If you're ready to do that, then I would say go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there. Now, let's get on with the podcast. Enjoy.
You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. My name is Daniel Im, the Director of Church Multiplication at Lifeway Leadership, and I'm here with Todd Atkins. The Director of Leadership here, and we have our guest who hot off the flight from Chicago, Mark Job. Mark Job is the senior pastor at New Life Community Church in Chicago, 25 locations, 40 worship services, and the author of Unstuck, Out of Your Cave, Into Your Call. He is here at the time of this recording. Our webinar on succession will have passed, but we do have a conference coming up on pipeline succession in the fall, and you can learn more about that at myleadershippipeline.com. Thanks, Mark, for being with us here today.
And just to be clear, Daniel, I don't do all 40 services, by the way, in Chicago.
Yeah, I love. I mean, you know, before we get into our questions, I'd love for you to share that, because you guys are really doing multi-site as church planting, though, right?
It really is. It's a bit of a different model. I started with 18 people in Back of the Yards neighborhood in Chicago. And we wanted to develop a church system that was resilient in the city. I felt like these pastors were burning out fast, leaving. And so we kind of stumbled into it before even this multi-site language was around.
Yeah.
But we do, people call us multi-site, but it's really like a church planting movement out of one church. So it's all live teaching. And out of the 40 worship services, 11 are in Spanish, one is in Mandarin, the rest are more or less English.
Yeah, that's awesome.
and it's really, really, I got a great group, a great team, 32 pastoral couples on staff that minister, and everything from sort of immigrant Mexican community to upscale young professionals. So it's a blast. It's great.
I remember interviewing you, if you remember this, maybe it was about a year ago or so on newchurches.com.
How could I forget you, Daniel? Yeah. Of course I remember that.
About preaching, and it was so cool to hear just the way that you guys approach team preaching. So yeah, it's awesome.
Good deal. Oh, well, I met Mark 4 years ago.
Okay.
I had an exponential West Coast thing somewhere. And Rick was talking. There was just a couple of us around.
I remember that. That's right.
Yeah.
That was you. Now I'm placing you, bro. So, there you go.
I've lost so much weight. That's what it is.
You look so much better than you did back then, man. That's you threw me off because you're just looking awesome.
God bless you.
That is awesome.
So ever since then, you know, one of the things that we really pride ourselves on is saying, hey, we are located in the South. I don't know if you picked up on that.
A little bit.
All the live musicians, guitars.
Yeah. Hey, at the airport, there was a country singer going on. And yeah, we loved it. Y'all.
We consider it our job to highlight people who, you know, people may not, they may not know you, or may not know that many pastors and churches in Chicago, but just who you are and all that you all do and the way that you do it, we love to bring in people that people should know.
Yeah, completely.
So
we're having a blast in Chicago, and so it's, we do the church, so 25 locations throughout Chicago, but we also started New Life Centers, which is huge right now in Chicago because violence is such a big issue.
Yeah, that's right.
And we have about 35 people on staff full-time that work in gang prevention, really? Anti-violence with at-risk youth in some of the toughest neighborhoods in Chicago.
Man, that's a topic of another podcast.
It's a whole nother topic.
Because,
yeah.
Man, there's so much to that.
750 homicides last year in the city of Chicago.
Wow. All right, we have to bring Mark back on.
Come on,
we
now,
do.
Let's
no,
go
we
back
do have to
our,
bring Mark back on.
We'll do it again. We'll yeah. do another one. No, right. We can do 5 questions on.
Yeah, we should.
All right, but right now we're really talking about Pipeline Week. We're getting ready for our Pipeline conference in the fall. Mark is one of the speakers there, mm-hmm. so we wanted to have him in before then and just give people a taste of who he is and what he's going to bring. So to go immediately into our first question, I want to ask you, how does an established leadership pipeline support succession?
Yeah, you know, I think, first of all, Todd, you have to kind of define succession, because I think sometimes when we think of succession, we think of senior pastor leadership, been there 20 years.
He's already speaking the language. What's going on right now?
Transitioning over. So I think people could be confused by what succession means.
Yes.
So if we're talking about I'm raising leaders and moving aside to let other leaders raise up, I think succession is happening all the time, at every level, at every moment in the church, especially if it's a growing, rapidly reproducing church. Amen. Does that make sense?
Let's close in prayer. That's good. No, it really is true. It's about most people think it's about replacement, and it's about reproduction.
Exactly.
And so I think, you know, seeing succession as someone we develop, or seeing leadership development as succession and someone we develop, is vitally important. So talk about how you guys do that on an annual basis, on a weekly basis, on a daily basis.
So we went from being a little church of just, I was the only guy on staff, to bringing on quite a few people on staff, most of them raised from within, in a pretty tough environment, city environment. And so we spend a lot of time thinking about how are we raising and deploying leaders, empowering, how are we stepping out, reproducing. So this is our language. Now, we're about this all day long. Yeah. And we haven't done the traditional model necessarily, where we've gone out and just, here's an empty slot, let's try to hire someone into this position. We've really tried to say, how do we raise people up and empower them? So although I understand the word pipeline, I get it. It's a great conference name, and I understand the concept of it. I think I don't like pipeline in the sense of it's not as cookie cutter assembly line ish as you would think. I think it's true in the early stages of development, developing disciples, getting them grounded. So we're very pipeline ish when it comes to a new believer, disciple, getting them going. But it's kind of like school. The further on you get in, it becomes a little bit more self-study, a little bit more customized, a little bit more mentoring, coaching. And so our pipeline, so to speak, is very relational, very DNA impartation, very mentorship oriented, very much let's get you doing. I think Daniel, Todd, I think one of the big problems with our training system is we overeducate people that aren't doing anything.
Yes.
That's the problem with college. My son would always like, Dad, why am I learning this? I want to quit. I know this means nothing to me. And so they're learning. We're overeducating them. And then we overeducate them and then say, okay, now do something that they're not trained to do at all. And so the time that I remember being most motivated to learn was when my daughter, just a couple of years ago, said, "Dad, I want to go skydiving." And so we were 13,000 feet in the air, and we had just signed a bunch of papers that said if something goes wrong, if the parachute doesn't open, if anything, we're not responsible. Yeah. And 13,000 feet in the air, the instructor says, "Now listen to me. I'm going to help you. This is the cord that you have to pull." No one had to say, pay attention.
Or put away your phone or
do anything like that, right? I wasn't texting. I wasn't snoozing. I was like, hey, what cord again? Show me. I mean, I was attentive because I was about to jump out of that airplane.
Yeah.
And I think people learn the best when, like Eric, who's traveling with me today, mm-hmm. he's about to start a new location. Mm. He's never done it before. Man, let me tell you, he's all ears. He's into it. Why? I think we need to coach people while they're doing it instead of try to upload all this information and then say, now you're ready to do it. So I'm much more in favor of a mentoring, coaching model of doing it. I let people drown a little bit, actually, and they're grabbing at me to learn. And I'm like, okay, now let's talk.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit our model.
So, yeah, that's good.
And, you know, we would say the reason why we moved Pipeline to a competency-based learning is that very reason, because people learn in the context of relationship.
Yeah.
That's how transformation happens, and it happens through knowledge, experience, and coaching. So that line of traditional education, college makes no sense. It just measures time.
Yeah.
And it measures knowledge, testing, and that's it. It doesn't measure competency at all. And you don't get competency without coming alongside somebody who's been there before.
At least internships are beginning to become mandatory in many programs, but it's still, for many, it's optional.
Yeah, right? They're starting to take on, and I think, so that's the way we raise leaders. I mean, we test them, we push them a little bit further than they can go, we give them more responsibilities as they're faithful, and then like Juan Sanchez, who was leading our fusion group at our Midway location and doing a just outstanding job at leading couples. Mm. And he sits down with me and says, "Hey, Pastor, you know, I feel like this," he's an educator, him and his wife, and in Chicago public school system, which is a challenge. And he says, "Hey, I feel like I want to step up to the next place. So should I quit my job and go to Bible school?" I said, "No, please don't do that, please. But I see it in you. I see the leadership." So our next launch, we actually launched him out with a core of people about 2 miles down the road to start a location in Garfield Ridge. Mm-hmm. And started there with about 100 people. That was about 3 years ago. Now he's got 300 people, still a full-time job. He never quit his full-time job. And this guy is doing an outstanding job, but he started with a small group, led a couple small groups, led a location. Mm. Now he's leading two congregations, English and Spanish, overseas. And that's kind of our model.
I love how you're practicing succession, you're practicing Pipeline, and you're a practitioner. So this leads us to our next question. We've shared a couple of great stories, that one, you know, especially, but how about the other side? You know, when have you seen succession fail?
Yeah. So I think that in our context, it's failed when we place a person in a position without seeing a good track record.
Okay.
We really try to avoid that. But as we've rapidly grown, you know, last Sunday we had close to 6,000 people. We're continuing to grow. We've baptized 1,000 people in the last 3 years. So it's a lot of new people, locations. And so we've seen the need to bring people in from the outside. In the past, we never did. We were like, we're going to raise all of our leaders from within. But we realized, hey, there's people saying, "I'm called to Chicago." And we thought, we need an on-ramp. But that's been tricky too, because you don't get to see their track record, and you can interview and you can assess, but it's hard to really know how they operate and work. Yeah. And so I think we've seen it when we have had leaders from the outside that we haven't had firsthand experience really, really testing them out. I think the other place where succession has failed is when we I include myself in this, when we're too controlling to release authority and the affection of the people. I mean, it's always hard to move out and let someone take in.
Yeah.
I'm convinced, Daniel,
well,
that
you've poured your heart so much into it, right?
Yeah.
And they're not going to do it exactly the same.
Yeah, I would like to say that it's more out of altruistic great reasons. It's usually out of more carnality. It's a little bit more out of insecurity. It's a little bit more out of affection, control issues. Yeah. And I think that I personally believe that the great majority of churches in America are at about 100 people or so because it's hard for pastors to release and delegate the affection that we're trained to be the holy man.
Yeah.
So we love the fact that people say, I want the pastor to pray for me. We marry, bury, baptize, do the message. People come to us. A lot of pastors, their entire identity is this, hey, the people need me.
Yeah.
I think that's a really bad model of ministry.
Yeah, and it's a barrier to succession.
Huge barrier to succession.
We don't need more professional Christians.
Yeah.
We need more professing
Exactly. And releasing. I remember the first time I had to do that when we went to sort of small group system. And I said, go to your small group leader first. And a lady called me up and said, hey, can I talk to you, Pastor? I said, yeah, did you go to your small group leader? Yeah, I did, but you're my pastor. Yeah. And I said, well, what did they tell you? And she told me what they told her. I said, you know, that's exactly what I would have told you. And it was hard not to jump in and try to rescue her. So I think succession fails out of our own insecurities. And I think the other time succession fails is when we don't have the courage to move someone to a different position if they're not working out. Sometimes we leave people in way too long.
Yeah.
And I think within the first 30 to 60 days, you can tell if someone's really going to make it or not.
Yeah.
But we don't have the courage because it's confrontational to say, you know what, bro, I love you. You're great, but this is not the position for you. And sometimes we let it turn into a train wreck or get so frustrated before we move people out. And I think we need to have some honest courage to move people to the right positions.
Yeah, love that.
Good deal. Well, I think that leads into our next question really well, which is, how do you identify potential leaders in your church?
Yeah, how do we identify potential leaders? Well, the short, easy answer that we used for years was we look for fast people, faithful, available, spirit-filled, and teachable.
How you added the S.
Yeah, we used to say fat, but fat didn't kind of work out. It became a little offensive and not politically correct. So
we turned it into fast.
S. You like that? Yeah. Spirit-filled. So we look for...
I mean, otherwise you could go P-H-A-T, right? That fat.
Yeah, okay, that. Yeah, you
but
could go that
like
way.
That's like the 90s, right? So,
so I used to say that.
Yeah. In the 90s, by the way.
Well, let's keep on going.
But I think to expand on that a little bit, we look for influencers. I mean, leaders are influencers. So for good or bad, they're shaking things up. People are following. They're starting things. They're moving things. There's activity around them. So we look for influencers. We look for people that are hungry.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have people that are influencers, but not in the spiritual realm. They want to make money. They want to start a business. They're good, but they just don't have that drive spiritually.
Yeah.
We look for people that have character. If they're influencers and they're hungry, but they don't have character, they're going to self-sabotage themselves.
Which relates to your previous point in terms of seeing them, observing them.
Oh, yeah.
Right? In your context with the whole track record.
Yeah.
Because character is one of those things you can't read about on a resume.
A resume can tell you anything. Yeah. The more I get into resumes are pretty much useless to a large extent. And reference calls are pretty much useless unless you've left bad. Then they're really good because you call the person, but they don't put that on the reference.
Yeah.
But I would say the other thing we look for is... are they people that get our spiritual DNA? I think every ministry, every place has a DNA.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are great people. They're just not great people for our culture.
Yeah, you're right.
Passion fit.
It has to be, yeah. It has to be
a job fit. It's a passion.
No, right. And there has to be this similar, like we're super highly relational, super highly, you know, we walk into a staff meeting and everybody knows each other, slap on the back. We're super highly relational. If you're not, you're going to have a hard time. Yeah. We're entrepreneurial. So we don't give you a manual. We throw you out there. We say we have an oral culture. People are always looking for written stuff. Where's your written stuff? I say we're oral culture. That's a better than saying we're disorganized and don't write anything down.
Yeah.
And we're organic. I'd rather say we're organic, you know, because that sounds better. That sounds kind of hipster and cool instead of saying we're disorganized and chaotic. So we're organic and oral culture. I'm helping you out, Todd. Now you kind of know. Those are the those are great words to use.
I like that.
I'm kind of cringing though.
Todd is a flip chart kind of guy.
Yes. I want to put it in a quadrant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we take you to his office, you'll see his entire office is full of flip charts.
Oh, we're very strategic, but we're strategic about the outcome, very, very clear about that. But in terms of, we give people a lot of freedom to in their context, especially in Chicago, like how to reach your community, we give you a lot of freedom.
Oh, it's have you read Extreme Ownership?
No.
Yes.
I need to write this down. Okay.
Simply because it will give you more verbiage. To a better way to, it'll give you a great way to explain it.
And the Navy SEAL stories are pretty amazing too.
It's compelling.
Yeah.
Because if you look at what happened in the military and the way that it was very hierarchy based, and you had to, like, before you did anything, it had to go all the way back through all the channels and up the chain to ownership, which is the best person to make the decision is the person on the ground.
Absolutely.
In the situation. Yeah. If they've been trained well, if they understand the culture, the values, the strategy, the philosophy behind what they're doing, they are the best person to make that decision.
If not, it becomes bureaucratic and some decision made over there that makes no sense. Yeah. And so
it's not fast enough.
Yeah. People that work well in our culture, they have to work well on their own. They have to figure things out. They have to be entrepreneurial. They have to be visionary, fast paced. I mean, we measure results, look for disciples, but we want you to figure it out. We're not going to handhold you. We're going to give you freedom, but we want the relationships, the value, and the vision to be intact.
That's good. That's good. Well, our next question is, how do you know when a person is ready to be released into a new leadership role? Now, I know you were talking about different characteristics that you look for in individuals. And earlier on, you were talking about the idea of coming alongside, being relational, the mentorship, and it's definitely that high touch. There are things that you look for, but there's also that relationship, that time you spend together. But at what point is an individual ready to be released into that new role?
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it, I always feel like people need to be maximizing their current opportunities. And and then pushing to the next opportunity.
Okay. You know, you want to see that in them?
I want to see it maximized. Yeah. Okay. I don't want you to say, you know, I know I have done a poor job at this and haven't done much with this. It's because I need greater responsibility.
You can't lead with authority.
Exactly. So I want them, at least in terms of their skills, I want them to maximize their opportunity. And then if you're in new life and you're maximizing your opportunity, someone's going to be pushing you up. Someone's going to be saying, hey, you have a greater capacity, and someone's going to be pushing you to the next level. But we really want you to do well at what you're doing and understand it and get it. Obviously, there's, you know, character issues. There's can I work with a team? Can I flow with leadership? Those are issues of compatibility. Someone always wants to be the exception. We want you to think outside of the box, but if you always want to be the exception, then usually there's a problem there, you know, that you're not flowing in the center of the river.
And then it's a chemistry fit too, right?
Absolutely. We've had people that I think were great people, but their pace was way too slow for our environment. We live in a big city. I mean, Chicago's 10 million people. It's fast pace. All of our locations right now have the mandate and the dream, the opportunity to reproduce in 3 years. So we That's expect awesome. To go from 25 to 50 locations.
Man, that is amazing.
So that puts some pressure on. That puts some, and guys that are energized by that vision, they're like all over it. Like, this is the dream, and we're living on the edge, raising leaders, looking at new neighborhoods, people that just get too overwhelmed by it and just see the negativity in it, and just they usually don't last very well, at least in leading locations. Yeah. They may do better at other positions, but not necessarily at leading.
Yeah. So that's every site is going to reproduce in 3 years.
Yes.
And then they're going to then reproduce again in 3 years.
Yes.
And again and again.
So our dream,
Fibonacci,
you know, our dream is to try to start a movement church. Yeah. What we call a movement church, not just a church that plants churches, because there's a lot of good churches. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of good churches that do that. I think only 4% do in the nation. Mm-hmm. But out of the churches that plant, most plant singular churches after a lot of planning and do one church.
Yeah.
We dream of what some places are doing in South America, Africa, China. We dream of a movement church, a rapidly reproducing, multiplying, disciple-making, multiplying, saturating church. We're dreaming about it in Chicago, but we've also started to plant in other cities around the world. Think about it as a virus. You drop it into a place and it reproduces rapidly.
Yeah.
It takes on the contours of where it's going. Cities have different tribes and neighborhoods and different ethnicities and languages. So we like to look at it as like a gospel virus. What if it really had rapid reproduction in it, and it was sort of the standard? Of course we make disciples, of course we multiply, and it spreads throughout an urban city, meeting in an old Lutheran, restarted Lutheran church, or a high school, or small and large, first generation Asians, Puerto Rican, African American, street people, CEOs, but it kind of spreads, is centrally generated, comes together. That's kind of what we dream of, that kind of church.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it as church leaders, we're not called to coast. We're really called to multiply. And a lot of times I think people will get into the situation where they are leading their church. And that's great. That's great that you're leading from day to day, and you're leading. You may be even growing a little bit. But whether it's a Great Commission or whether it's Ephesians 4, we're called to a higher level of multiplication.
Yeah.
It's not just leading, it's being a multiplier. So I love that you've put the onus on each and every one of your campuses to reproduce itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's moving from addition to reproduction, right? Yeah. It's changing the scorecard.
Yeah.
Right? It's neat. Ed Setzer and I recently wrote 1,000, and we'll put this in the show notes, but this little ebook called 1,000 Churches, right? And the whole idea of how do you not just plant one church or three churches, how do you plant 1,000 churches in your lifetime?
Yeah.
Right. And the only way you can move from addition to reproduction is if you have that viral mentality.
Absolutely.
Right. We were comparing elephants, the reproduction lifestyle or life cycle of an elephant to a rabbit.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's crazy, right? An elephant, it's about every 5 years they're able to, because when they have a baby, right, a calf, the calf stays with them for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Right, whereas you look at a rabbit every month. In fact, even moments after they give birth, they're able to get impregnated again.
Whoa.
So within a year, I mean, just and every litter is probably about 7 to 12.
Yeah.
So every month they're reproducing 7 to 12. right? And it's just, you know, do the math. It's rapid. Insane.
Yeah, and it's a different dynamic, right? You know, I know certain churches that, you know, have to raise, you know, $2 million, have, you know, 20 people on staff to start one. That's not us. Mm. But let me tell you quick.
That's the elephant.
That's the elephant. That's the elephant. And I don't think, I grew up on the mission field. Mm. And, you know, my first remembrance of church was in a stable in northern Spain. Yeah. Literally a horse stable where my dad was planting a church. And so that's kind of like, so I'm not really into like big, I mean, we meet in a couple big buildings, but I'm okay with rapid reproduction. Let me tell you the story of Chewy, for example. I think you have to have a compelling villain. Vision.
Yeah.
There's a lot of compelling villains as well.
It took everything in me not to use the Chewy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I was thinking the restaurant.
Yeah, no, Chewy. Yeah. I know why you imagined that.
They do have great chips.
So here's Chewy. Chewy was a security at our Midway, our big campus, for 7 years. I always knew the corner that he was at. He had his blue jacket security. Didn't lead a home group because he worked in the evenings. His wife was very involved in Sunday school. Mm. But we launched out a location out of, we gathered 50 people, launched them out to Oak Lawn area. And Chewy said, I want to go with them. So he went with them. The new church planner, who was 27, is like, man, this is a great guy. So faithful, real committed, like signed up for everything. Let me help out everything. Hey, what's your vision? You know, one day I would like to plant a church in Spanish. This was 3 years ago. So Chewy went, became an elder, small group leader. The pastor told him, well, start a small group in the area that you want. Yeah. If you gather a core of 40, then we'll launch you out.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, we just had the opening of New Life Blue Island in Spanish, and there was about 120 people that gathered there. Chewy's leading it.
Awesome.
See, if he would have stayed at Midway, you have to have a vision that sucks people up, a vacuum vision, I think, that goes and brings people up.
That's good.
And I think sometimes we don't have a vision that's compelling enough to raise leaders or push leaders out of their comfort zone. And so Chewy's in his fourth week of actually leading a service, a worship band, all in Spanish, reaching people. It's awesome to see him preaching and leading a community of faith.
I love that.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I'm excited.
From security to planter.
Exactly. Exactly.
I do think it's important. I know this is, before the podcast, you talked about, hey, I listen to your podcast and it's a lot more than five questions. You sneak in like 30.
Yeah.
y'all sneak in 30. So I do have a sub question. How important is that compelling vision and how do you keep that fresh?
I think without it, you fall into maintenance mode. Our compelling vision came in 1995 after a 40-day season of fasting and prayer. And there was about 25 of us that fasted 40 days, just water and juice. Mm. And the congregation did somewhat of it. My wife said that, you know, the pastors looked like concentration camp. I started this way and lost like 40 pounds. I mean, we were like... Yeah. But the final day of the fast, and sometimes, you know, fasting, I get more carnal during fasting than spirit, especially the first few days. I mean, I don't have caffeine and I'm like, you know, hungry and cranky. My wife wants to say, get off your fast so you can, you know, get back to normal. But, you know, once you go over that and kind of get rid of that stuff and spend some time with Jesus, I took the last day of the fast and I took my Bible to hotel room. And I said, I just want to digest what I've been learning. I want to pray. I just want to take some time. And so I did. And I spent 24 hours in my Bible. I was praying. And I prayed a prayer. I said, Lord Jesus, give us 1% of the city of Chicago. And like as soon as I prayed that, I was like, where did that come from? And I felt like it was a Holy Spirit God moment where this Holy Spirit was empowering me to pray. And so I actually took out a calculator and started figuring out, well, what does that mean? Mm. And I realized I just prayed for 30,000 people. Mm. And so I went back to our leadership team and I said, what would it look like to have a church of 30,000 people throughout the city? They said, well, couldn't meet in one location. It'd have to be multi-ethnic, multilingual, meet in different neighborhoods, strong small groups, aggressive at evangelism, strong in prayer, reaching CEOs and street people, multilingual because Chicago. And we drew out the vision. We were one church in one location in one community at the time. Mm. It was that vision. Mm. And so I said, let's do it then. And the very next, that year we planted out four in the next 4 years. We didn't really know what we were doing. Here's an old sound system. Here's a good leader. Here's some people that want to go. God bless you. We're sending you out and we'll kind of try to encourage you along the way. But guess what? It was that vision that caused us to be the church who we are now. Without we would have been trying to get bigger in one location. Probably not have the impact that we're having right now. Probably not raise the leaders that we're raising right now. Mm. And so I think a vision, and again, I think you discover vision. You don't make it up. I think you have to press into God. You have to look at your gift, your setting, your situation, discern it from God. But once you have a clear sense of this is our mandate, then I think that fuels reproduction.
Yeah, that is so compelling. Important.
You cannot pick up a compelling vision off a copier machine.
No. Or from a committee. Worse yet.
There's so many people that, they will Google a vision statement, church's vision statements, and then say, oh, well, here's a dozen I like, and we'll put some of this together. No.
That's not the way it works.
You cannot get a compelling vision that way.
No. I was at a pastor's conference recently speaking to 1,200 pastors up in Canada, and a guy came up to me afterwards, and he said, I'd just been hired at a church, and he said, the pastor told me, you got to come up with our vision. I'm like, the pastor told you got to, he says, yeah. So I gathered a committee together to try to figure out our vision. It was like, Lord, help us. You get a committee together. I think they can discern. I think leadership has to discern vision. Yeah. God-given leadership, press into God, prayer, fasting, discerning, time away. What have you called us to do? Mm. I mean, I think a team can shape that vision, but I think there has to be spiritual leaders that don't come up with just this generic, this would be a good idea. Mm. No one is going to put their life on the line for a good idea. I won't. I'm not going to sacrifice for a committee idea. But if I know it's a God thing, if I'm clear that this is a God thing that is birthing God, then there's an army that'll rise up and say, we will follow after that. We won't, even if we're underpaid, overworked, tackling challenges. I mean, I have some warriors on my team like, dude, you're jumping into this with very little parachute and not a lot of resources, but with this crazy thing like, but God's with this and we're going to do it. And I'm a part of a team that believes in me. It's going to coach me. If I have to get another job to fund this, I'll do that. But I believe in this vision. There's something powerful about that.
It really is the reality of, and I think it's Will says this a lot, Will Mancini says this a lot, that vision is transferred through people.
Yeah.
Not paper.
Yeah. He does say that, yeah.
And it's true. I mean, every story you're telling, it's about the transference that happens through people. It's eye to eye. It's knee to knee.
Yeah.
It's all those things that only happens when you have real relationship and real life that you're sharing along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was in Korea, when we were discerning the vision for our ministry, I brought all our leaders away to a retreat. Mm. And I was like, you know what? We're just going to worship and we're going to pray and we're going to just... we're going to do it all day until something comes up.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, we were like, okay, we're going to call our ministry 937 based on Matthew 937. Mm. The harvest is plentiful and the workers are few.
Yeah.
Right. Because our ministry, we were ministering to expats and people who were only in Korea for 2, 3, 4 years and they were going to be gone.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, what would it look like if we were to raise up harvest workers here so that wherever they go, because they're going to leave, let's not try to keep them, but wherever they go, they're able to be missionaries missionaries there.
Yeah. So, Koreans get it. They got the prayer mountains and, you know, they can't do anything without an hour of prayer. Yeah. So it's like, yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna move us to our last question and back toward talking succession. How do you offer ongoing support and development after one of your leaders is released? So one of these guys goes out and, you know, he starts a campus. So, you know, you told the story of Chewy,
yeah,
up to the past and now present. What does that look like in the future for him?
Yeah, so let me give you a couple stories. One, I've helped start a couple locations. Just I've done at one time. I was actually preaching. I wouldn't recommend this. I was preaching at three different locations on Sunday morning because I helped start one on the north side. So I was preaching to a gentrified white, college educated, sort of yuppie crowd on the north side, mainly white. And then I was traveling to Midtown, Tri-Taylor, and this was kind of Hispanic and black. And then I was going to more of a Hispanic white area on the south side. So, you know, I'd have to change my message. The message was the same, but the delivery was different.
Yeah.
White people respond to, like, insight, humor. But if you get too passionate, they get a little scared. Like, whoa, this is a little I mean, you're making me nervous. You're passionate. But some minorities, like, if you don't have passion, man, I don't even believe a word you're saying. Like, show me you got passion. Don't tell me humor. Don't give me suggestions and insights. Just tell me where to go and how to do it because I'm fired up. So that's a whole nother discussion as well. But as I stepped out of those locations, I would find a leader that I believed in, that I saw a track record, and I would give that, usually elders that we were working with, and hand that over to them. And I would say, you know the vision clearly. You know what we're doing clearly. I'm not going to mess with it. I'm not going to micromanage. When I put you as a leader, you're the leader. Hmm. And then I would just walk away and not preach again at it.
Yeah.
After leading maybe for 5 years, not preach one more time in it, not micromanage. And I would say, when you need me, you need to come and ask me.
Yeah.
And guess what? They would get stuck and they would come and call and ask. And so one of it's saying, hey, I'm going to trust you, but I'm going to be here for you.
Yeah.
We also put all of our pastors in coaching groups. We call them BTC. So all of our pastors, for example, all of our pastors meet every Monday. It's a blast. Most people quit on Mondays. Yeah. So we meet on Mondays. And then the other two Mondays, we meet in five coaching groups. We have a seasoned pastor that meets with five pastors, and they talk about their family, where they're stuck in ministry. So there's ongoing coaching that's going on. I think the coaching after you get someone up and going is almost more important than the pre-coaching. I think before they step into it, you need to discern character and calling, but you need to put a lot more attention to, once they're in that position, coaching them so they don't get stuck.
That's good stuff.
I think we have tons of church planters, for example, that get a lot of training, a lot of help to plant it. And they're like, okay, it's planted. I think you need more coaching after it's planted.
Because you're not going to retain it all.
No.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you're putting them in groups as well, because we would say, okay, we don't want to go in and do training in rows. We want to do it in circles.
Yeah.
Because everybody around that circle, every guy in that group has a different level of competency in, you know, helping couples with their marriage or finances or, I don't know, conflict.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's so many things that they can actually learn from each other, and they learn more by teaching each other.
Yeah. It's been powerful. In fact, we have our pastor groups, like, travel around from location to location, and sometimes it'll be this guy's turn, and we'll just focus on them, their family, their location, 6-7 people sitting around a team, very informal, cup of coffee, asking questions, praying over them. So it's support, but it's coaching as well. We call them BTC groups, breakthrough ceiling groups. Are you stuck physically?
Yeah.
Is there a physical limitation here? Is there a leadership limitation here, organizational limitation? Or is there a spiritual limitation? Are there some spiritual issues that we need to deal with? And so we get more seasoned guys that work with sort of the team as they speak to each other.
Man,
good deal.
That's good. That's really right. Good.
Now we can't close in prayer. We can.
All right. So be sure to check out myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our upcoming conference on succession, where Mark is going to be one of our speakers. And we'll catch you next time.
Before you go, we want to remind you about the free e-booklet, Pipeline, Succession at Every Level. If you want to develop leaders at every level of your church, this booklet is for you. To download, go to lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/leadership and select the free booklet tab at the top, and you can download it there.